4, 3, 2, 1. You are listening to, hold on a second, shit. You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 534, brought to you by Frank's Home and Gardens.
She's a small wonder, lovely and bright and soft curls. She's a small wonder, a child unlike other girls. She's a miracle, and I grant you, she'll enchant you at her sight. She's a small wonder, and she'll make your heart take flight. La 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 la. Microchips here and there. She's a small wonder. Brings love and laughter everywhere.
And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast, the show where every week we talk about Small Wonder, the early 80s sitcom about Vicky the robot child, who was also the family's butler and made, which is kind of weird. This week, we're talking about Season 3, Episode 12, Urkelbot Meets VickyBot, and which this episode is brought to you thanks to America Online, keeping America connected since 1994. I just want to assure the listeners, since Adam's left, nothing's changed. We're still going to be talking about Vicky, the small wonder robot, every week like we do every week. And the show is basically going to be the same as it always has. I've got a message from our sponsors right here. Blackwater Paramilitary. When you need a job right, done right, inside or outside the law, call Blackwater. Tell them John sent you for 15% off your next small village torching. And let's get the show started. This first segment is the Cool Brand Cigarette Hour, where we, you know, cool out, smoke Cool Brand cigarettes, and you'll be cool. Howie Bullitt, Small Wonder, the television show. Do you think that it is as culturally relevant as it was in the 80s or more so?
I don't know what to say about Small Wonder other than that I just, how did that happen? Like, so many people had to say that that was a good idea to make that show. And they all were like, yeah, let's go for it. And then people watched it. I can't get past that part. I'm sorry I can't be funny about it. You mentioned Small Wonder and like my brain went into a tailspin of like, that seems like something that I should have dreamt up that didn't actually happen, but it did happen.
The 80s, I mean, like when's the last time you watched, like I watched Urkel back in the day, like in the early years of Urkel, and I thought it was like the funniest thing. And if I watch it now, it's like so not funny. It's funny again. You know what I mean? Like, it's so bad. You know, it's like Carl will be like eating popcorn. And then like Steve will walk in and like, I've got a new vacuum cleaner, Carl. And like back then I was watching. I was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. And now it's like clearly Urkel's vacuum cleaner is going to explode on Carl and throw his popcorn everywhere. And of course it does. And it's so obvious that I think it's the funniest thing ever now because it's so predictable and bad. Sam Barrett, Small Wonder and or Urkel, what's your stance?
I have no idea what Small Wonder is. I might be dating myself. Urkel, I enjoy. grew up with that stuff. But my husband would also say that I'm corny as hell, so it makes sense. I would like it.
Well, there you have it. Anyways, listen, Punk News Podcast. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. We got a bunch of mail this week. I'm not even going to read it on what I am going to read. I'm just going to read segments of. We'll try to get to the rest of it maybe later on, maybe next week or something. But you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. I'm just going to power through. But Hallie and Sam, if you have any comments, please feel free to pipe in. This is from Francis. One down, one to go. This is from Bylox. Please never have John sing again. Think of the children. This is from Herman Felix. I think we've all seen this coming for a while. Adam has been taking more and more absences. He often would say he didn't listen to the music this week. It's sad, but I guess it's better to move on than become stale. I hope to see Adam on the show again. His and John debates often made my afternoon drive tolerable. So much traffic in LA. That's from Herman. This is from Nicholas. Please do not replace Adam with some boring dude. And that's what Nicholas had to say. This one doesn't really have a name. I am sad to see Adam go. He always provided a nice balance to John's more volatile opinions. I also liked hearing Adam talk about some obscure Canadian band that no one ever heard. Some of them were good. Some of them were good. Okay, two of them were good. But that is what it's all about. I cried myself to sleep three times. It's like my parents were getting divorced. This is from Jen. This is from June. I've been listening for about 2 years. I liked Adam, but I'm hoping this means that we get more Hallie, more Em, and more Samantha. I feel like John and Adam's viewpoints and tastes are mostly the same, and I'd like more variety. Hallie's able to talk about things from all angles. Em is quiet, and then she'll say something crazy like she loves blood incantation. Sam's jovial grumpiness is one of my favorite things. I hope we get more of them on each show. And that's from June.
Nice.
This is from Tux Tux. Hallie has been on the show more frequently. I wonder how she feels now that she is the most common voice after John. Will other people steer the show as much as Adam and John, or will John always call the shots? Are Hallie and Em worried about being compared to Adam? And that's from Tux Tux. I guess time will tell. And this is from Alex. Did someone tell Billy Joel that John murdered one of his kids? Just brutal. And that's from Alex. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Sam and Hallie, I don't know if anybody wants to respond to any of those emails or if we should just power on through.
No, those are all nice. Those were cool emails. Thanks, everybody. Sam, what did you think? Anything?
I miss Adam. I do. Yeah. But yes, I do appreciate that someone did encapsulate my I guess my aura in, you know, because I'm never on these things, in a few sentences. That was nice. Yes.
Well, there you have it. Last week we were going to play one of Hallie Bullitt's tracks. But it was a rare track, so she had to dig deep and pull it back up. Hallie Bullitt, tell us about this deep cut that you're bringing on the show today.
Yeah, this is just like a great, like, garagey, punky band from the 90s. They're putting stuff out again now, I guess, on Rumbar Records, which is up in Boston, doing like a lot of great garage stuff. I was surprised when I reached out to try to find this track. I actually found out that this band is releasing music again, which is super awesome. But yeah, this is Electrolux, and this was just like a song of theirs that I loved back in the day. It's called Robitussin, and it's super hard to find. So I hope you enjoy it, because I don't know how else you're gonna listen to it.
And that was Electrolux coming deep from the annals of long-lost 7-inch singles. Okay, let's hit our news this week. Mannequin Pussy have released a new EP. They're going to release a new EP, and they released a video for Control. The new EP is called Perfect, and that's out May 21 on Epitaph Records. The new song slash video is called Control, and it features the band in a surrealist type situation in the middle of the woods. And within the woods, there's kind of like a bedroom, and the singer kind of smashes up the bedroom and lights it on fire in the middle of the woods. Hallie Bullet, I know you were a fan of this track, or a hater. I wasn't sure which, actually, because you just said, I have to talk about this. So let Mannequin Pussy and Control. Where do you stand, Hallie Bullet?
I freaking love this band. I think this band is incredible. And I Patience, which was like their last release, I think came out in 2019. I'm pretty sure I talked about that album on our like year-end wrap-up. I just thought that was like one of the best records of the year. So excited that they're putting out new stuff. I'm so excited that their stuff comes out on Epitaph, because I feel like it's I just like when bands that are like not in the like the 90s mold of like what Epitaph used to be. I just like that they've like branched out. There's different kinds of punk, and like I'd like to see music like this being included in the Epitaph family. And I don't know. I just think that Marissa, or I guess she's calling herself Missy now. I just think she's like, whatever. This is not even me just like, this is not hyperbole. I really think she's like our generation's like Courtney Love, like Hole, the Cranberries. Like I just think this band is it. I love this band. I think this track is great. I thought the video was cool. She directed it herself. And if you haven't seen the video, it's kind of, well, I guess maybe I shouldn't give away the video, but it's smart and like artsy, just enough artsy. Do you know what I mean? And that it's like smart punk to me. It's like smart thought out punk, and not maybe like some of the dumber punk that we all had to get used to for a while. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I don't know. I like it. What did you guys think of this?
I love this band. I believe I did put Patience on my 2019 list. That Patience literally blew me away when it came out. I think I was like listening to it like most of the summer or something like that. I really think that this band is, you know, they're a little bit like indie. They're a little bit edgy, I think. This video really made sense to the track, right? I was like, you know, I'm a fan. I really appreciate that there are female punks ruling this genre right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. I thought the video was pretty cool. I'm always down for surrealist stuff, as long as it's not like try hard surrealist, I guess. And this wasn't try hard surrealist. I liked how the video kind of kept escalating. You know, it starts out kind of calm. It gets crazier. It gets crazier. And then by the end, it gets like really crazy. So I dug the video, and the singer, Marissa, I think she's, I don't know if it's naturally a practice, but she's very good at acting on the camera screen. You know what I mean? And that, like, sometimes you'll see a video and someone just kind of standing there or walking around. She's purposefully making her movements and gestures. Like, if you saw someone doing that in real life, you'd be like, that person is clearly crazy. But because it's, like, on the video screen, it looks, like, cool, you know? Actually, someone who I was just watching doing this earlier was David Bowie. I was watching David Bowie during his Plastic Soul era, and he does the exact same kind of thing. So I thought that was cool. As to the track, I think the track is cool. I wasn't blown away. I thought it was good. I thought it was cool. I do think it's interesting that as rock and roll, I guess, kind of decreases, of the niches in which it is staying stronger, getting stronger, it appears that the biggest foothold is kind of 90s, punky-ish, indie-ish rock, alt-rock, you know, like Hole, like Pixies, that kind of stuff. And I don't know why that is so effective to younger people, as opposed to, like, I guess to my generation, it was like hardcore, you know. And the generation before that was just like straight up punk, I guess. Like, why is 90s rock, I guess, what seems to speak most to the youth? I have one completely unfounded hypothesis that I haven't tested whatsoever, but I would guess, whereas my generation or whatever, I hate to draw myself as an old man, is, you know, the faster, harder, crazier, wilder, perhaps since the world is kind of crazy right now, and perhaps because people are like, you know, let's address our mental health, or we all need a break sometime. Maybe that's even reflected in the music, and that in the music, they don't want the craziest, wildest, most abrasive thing. They want something that is a little bit that's strong and forceful, but isn't like out of control, if you will. I don't know. Is that hypothesis completely unfounded? Maybe.
No, I don't know. I don't think it's unfounded. I feel like I've always heard that things, I'm sure you could find all kinds of theories, but I feel like I've always heard that things kind of go on like a 25-year cycle. So I feel also just like culturally, it was just kind of time for that 90s stuff to like have its moment again, you know? So that's just kind of how I'm thinking about it. But I don't know. I'm sure people have all kinds of different theories about this. Sam, why is the 90s shit? Why do the kids love the 90s shit?
And do they? Or is that a false, not dichotomy? Is that a fake statement? Is 90s stuff not as popular as it seems to be? Because it seems to me 90s stuff is like huge right now.
No, well, I am a product of, you know, the 90s, right? I am I think right now, I don't know if it has anything to do with COVID or not, but like, you know, we're seeking happier times right now, right? So has been like, you know, just in fashion, I've been tracking a little bit, you know, things from the 90s coming back, like, you know, like t-shirts with like, you know, Wu-Tang and like, you know, like things like that, like even like pop like t-shirts, like coming back and stuff like that. And, you know, I really think that we're seeking happier times. We're looking for nostalgia a little bit. And doesn't that happen like every year or so? It was like we always like look back at some other time period, bring some things back. So, yeah, no, I am totally looking at the 90s. Most of my playlist recently has been 90s playlists. And you know, I have been finding myself gravitate towards things that sound 90s ish now. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Speaking of 90s things, and I just realized there was a bunch of bullshit I wanted to talk about before the show even gets started. So we'll do a second half opening when we kick off the second half of the episode where I'm going to talk about random bullshit. But let's talk about something that's not bullshit. Bracket, they are releasing a long lost album. The album is called Like You Know, and it was supposed to be released years ago on Caroline Records, but the album was shelved and never actually released after Caroline restructured. It's not unheard. Actually, it's certainly not unheard of. I guess it's somewhat rare, but it's certainly not unheard of for a band's album to be shelved and never released. Nico is one of the most famous ones. And it's certainly not unusual for a label to massively rework an album and then release it. I got some thoughts on that, but Sam or Hallie, do you guys have any strong opinions on Bracket or maybe what it would be like to be a band? Actually, and here's the interesting thing. So obviously, Caroline was a major label, was affiliated with major labels. Caroline essentially was a branch of a major label. And so Bracket didn't own their album for years. So Caroline owns the album, but if they don't want to put it out, too bad, Bracket. We own it. There's nothing you can do about it. And that was not that uncommon of a thing, especially in the 80s and 90s. And even in the 70s with Neil Young. Neil Young had that happen like seven times. And so now either the contract has lapsed at the end of the contract, or perhaps Bracket terminated the copyright through a mechanism called copyright termination and got it back. But it must be kind of weird to put all this energy into an album and it gets locked in the vaults and never comes out. A similar comparison, it's not identical, is when Beastie Boys did Paul's Boutique. They worked on that album for 3 years and they were extremely excited to put it out. And as we all know now, it's a masterpiece. However, when they actually released it, the record label didn't promote it at all. That was Capitol. it came out, and the new CEO called them into the office, and he says, "Not this time, boys, not this time." And the Beastie Boys were like flabbergasted because they had worked for 3 years only to be told, "Not this time, not this time," you know. And so it must be extremely like defeating and sad to work on an album and not be able to put it out. And actually, Taylor Swift has this exact issue to a different degree with regards to her back catalog. Anyway, Hallie Bullet, what do you think it feels like to record an entire album and then have it be locked away forever? And will we see this again? Because I would argue no, because major labels aren't nearly as don't sign nearly as many bands as they used to, when they put out much fewer releases than they used to. They put way more stock in each individual release. So will we see the era again where bands record entire albums and the owner of the album says, "Meh, I don't think I'm putting it out"?
I mean, I think this happened a lot, especially back in the era when this happened to Bracket, because labels were gobbling up so much punk. And then, you know, with Caroline, I feel like Caroline ended up having like a lot more success with like electronica music. So they just like totally shifted. And I don't know if this thing that happened with Bracket was part of that shift. But like, I just, the idea, like as an artist, the idea that you would write an album and then you just don't own it and no one ever gets to hear it, it's like, I don't know how you'd get out of bed in the morning. It would be so crushing, because it's not just the time you put in. Anyone that puts time into like a project for work and then that project just ends up like dying on the vine, it's terrible because of the time you've put in and the energy. But this is like, it's your art. You've put like your thoughts and your feelings and your relationships, and you've put all of your creativity and your soul into a thing, and then it basically just vanishes. Like it just disappears. Like it is so like crushing to me to think about it that I'm actually gonna, I want to stop talking about it. It's like making me sweat. It's like honestly making me sweat to think too hard about this. So yeah, I don't know. Someone else talk about it.
Well, I would think that, like, you know, because I don't know, I don't know if Bracket like toured after this album was made, or if they like broke up or any of that. I have no context whatsoever about that. But like, I would think that like if they did tour, I was like, wouldn't you play the songs? I was like, it must suck to be like a Bracket fan at the time and be like, oh, I'm seeing Bracket, right? And oh, they're playing the song I've never heard of before because they just never came out. Yes, I really think, like, you know, I don't think that this will happen these days, because I feel like there has been a shift in the music industry with, like, you know, bands potentially not wanting to go with major labels or, you know, just bigger labels, right? I was like, you know, there was a time where, you know, before the pandemic, where I was like, you know, there was people self-releasing things. They were just like, whatever, I'm just going to put it out myself. Because, you know, maybe they're burned, or maybe, like, you know, it just didn't work out and they just want their music out there. So I think now, especially with, like, you know, how records are pressed and stuff like that, and they could potentially get it quite affordable, like, you know, pressed and, you know, just to get their music out. I was like, you know, there are options now. I think Bandcamp is also pressing things, so that's also an option. So you know, you don't necessarily need a major label or any of that. Especially when, you know, I've seen many bands get signed to a major and just nothing happens.
Collectors wise, one of the biggest gems one can have in one collection is a shelved, not released album. And so they're not always easy to, actually they're always very hard to find, but it is cool when you have, you know, one of these albums that was never released, like as a promo or something like that.
Or a test press.
Or a test press. Well, that's even better. A test press of something that was never released, you know.
Oh, yeah. The unicorn.
Yeah. Exactly.
My biggest Discogs regret was about 5 years ago, someone put up – no, I've got two big Discogs regrets. My second biggest one was Steve Ignorant of Crass recorded a rap song once, and it was so bad he decided not to put it out. On Discogs, someone put up one of the 5 test presses for like $20, and I didn't buy. I don't know why I didn't buy it. I should have. And it's like, oh, like I asked him about it once. I said, oh, Steve, you know, how about that? I'm like, you know, I could have bought that once, but I was too slow. He's like, no one can buy that, mate. I'm like, what do you mean no one can buy it? He's like, well, there's only 2 and I have 1 and I know who has the other one. And I didn't like want to burst his bubble, but I'm like, you know, but I would love to hear this track just to see what it is. The other one is I could still kick myself. About 5 years ago, someone put up a 12-inch version of the first Rudimentary P&I EP, which was never released, for $350. And I'm like, I don't want to spend $350 on a record. Like, a year later, it sold for $2,000. And the money isn't even the thing. You know, $350 is a lot of money, but 5 years later, $350, like it's not going to affect your life at all. And oh my God, to have a unreleased Rudimentary P&I record, oh my God. So anyways, I feel brackets pain. Listen, let's talk about another reissue. This is a reissue that no one saw coming that exploded the internet. And here's what it is. Bad Astronaut, one of, I don't know if it's fair to say, side projects that included Joey Cape, and actually was kind of a super group. They are re-releasing their entire discography and one new song. It's Joey Cape, Jonathan Cox, Mark DeSantis, Tom Flowers, Todd Capps, Derek Plourd, who has now passed away and kind of signified the end of the band, and Angus Cook. It's kind of a super group that does kind of, I guess, indie rock-ish kind of songs, almost sometimes adult contemporary, sometimes glam. They're putting out a box set, which it's cool. Well, a box set that includes everything they've done, which is like 3 12 inches, I think, and a couple of 7 inches, and one new song. And first of all, I will say, like, in the 90s, box sets were everything. Like a 4-CD box set was like $90 or $100, you know. Now a 4-CD – I mean, they don't even put those out anymore. But, like, now you get those used for, like, $10 or something. So it's cool for a box to come out on anything, because as a music fan, I love me a good box set. Although I usually prefer unreleased stuff as just to oppose everything in one place. But it is – I mean, if I'm a fan of any band, I would love to get a box set of that band, essentially. And so it's cool that that's coming out. I think a lot of people were surprised that Bad Astronaut did a new song, because they said they were never going to release another song, but it's probably in tribute to Derek. But I think the notable thing for me was Fat Records was like, okay, this Bad Astronaut box set's coming out. It sold out in literally like a minute. Like a minute. A $100 box set or $80 box set sold out in a minute. That's how hot this stuff is. And also, to Fat's credit, that's how good Fat is at marketing stuff and getting people hungry for their material. And I don't even mean that as an insult. I mean, Fat is very good at marketing stuff. And Fat is good, regardless of my opinion of some of the individual music on the label, some of our, like, Fat is very good at getting people to see there is value in music and music is worth something. The counterattack is, you could say, no, they're making needless tchotchkes, which people are vying for when people need to rebuy the same thing over and over and over. You could make that argument either way. I think I like the argument that they're making the argument that music is valuable again, that they're making things in nice presentations and saying, this is music, this is important stuff, it should be presented in its best form. Sam, Bad Astronaut, were you within the first 30 seconds of the sale, and did you pick up all 300 copies so you can sell them all at Discogs later?
So it actually, an initial run went out, and that sold out in like 2 seconds. I actually got the second like release of it. So yes.
You admit to it then.
I did get I should be getting a box now. I do think that, and it was, I think, like $80 or something. So I do think that is in a sense quite affordable, that it's, I think, was it like 4L? No. Yeah, it's like 3 LPs and 1 7-inch. So, you know, especially since, like, you know, if you bought a record from like Target or something, it's like $30 a record. But yeah, no, I do like when things are neatly presented and packaged well, especially when the records look or works with the album art very well. So I'm hoping that the packaging of the entire thing is great. I do appreciate Fat for all they do, because they really do, like, you know, they do elevate bands, I think. They do, I think, take care of their bands, hence why these bands keep on going back to them to release things. It's almost like once you're a Fat band, you're always a Fat band, like, you know, in a sense, right? Even if they move on. Sometimes they come back. So yeah, like they are doing something, and I think I'm pretty sure Fat is opening their store tomorrow, or you know, because they also do like limited runs of things, and they make it store exclusives. So they know what they're doing. They know how to get my money and my husband's money. So
yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like, I mean, it's clearly not like a needless tchotchke, right? If like people are so excited about it, right? Like people are so psyched about this, and I think it's cool. I mean, I know like there were some people that were like, oh, they said they wouldn't do stuff without Derek, there's no band without Derek, so where's this new song coming from? I think like, you know, I think like if they had continued the band, you know, if you continue a band right after someone dies, that's one thing. If like, if 15 years later, you want to like put out a new song or whatever, that to me is just like, you're more like paying tribute to what the thing was. You're paying tribute to this person that died that played in the band. You're not trying to like, 15 years later, you're not trying to like just continue the band without someone that's missing. Right. You're like paying homage to what it was. And I don't know. I think this is really cool that they're doing this. And I wasn't like a huge Bad Astronaut fan. I'm now realizing maybe I kind of missed the boat on that stuff, because in listening to it again, getting ready for this episode, I was like, this stuff is really good. Why didn't I listen to this more? But yeah, it's just like, it's cool to see people getting so excited about this.
I was listening to it. I was like, oh, this kind of sounds like a Dull Contemporary. so
the new track, I agree with you. The new track, I wasn't big on, but some of the other older stuff, I went back and listened to again, and I was like, oh man, a lot of this is really good.
There is this weird area where punk or post-punk, not post, well, post-punk, but post-rock or punk or like emo punk, you're like, oh, wait, is this like the more nuanced edge of punk rock? Or is this band literally just doing Phil Collins music? You know what I mean? You're like, that's often what infuriates me the most about some of the commenters, is I'll put out something like super weird and aggressive and strange. They're like, this stuff isn't punk. And then we'll just play like Genesis's I Can't Dance, but it's just some band's some other name, but it's basically Genesis doing I Can't Dance. And they're like, oh, this is so good. I'm like, this is B101, they're Kiss 101. Anyways, listen, Sam, I am beating up Phil Collins for no need, because he does have some good songs, despite the fact that he is often boring and sappy and dry. Let's play a song that's not boring and sappy and dry. What do you got?
So I think I'm going to start doing this, because I am I am Chinese, and there has been a recent uptick of hate in the world for my people. So I'm going to start playing some music from China. So this is a band called Chinese Football. They're actually from China, and they actually tour China. This track is from their album. I think it came out a few years ago, called Continue? So this track is called Adventure Island.
Thank you.
and that was Chinese football doing Adventure Island. Sam, do you know it? Is that named after the wonderful cartoon?
I have no idea because I'm a very bad Asian and I actually don't speak Chinese too well. So I'm not sure if it is or not because I have no idea what they're actually singing about.
I'm going to interrupt you because I just remembered it's not Adventure Island, it's Adventure Time. So there you have it. Listen, I wanted to talk about this at the beginning of the show, but I forgot because I was so hyped up on the mail. Listen, people, Summer Soiree 5, it is in the earliest stages. I reached out to a venue, and I was like, if we did a show in, November, what do you think about that? And he's like, let's do it, I need the money. And I'm like, all right. So I reached out to a couple of bands, and I was like, if we did a show in November on a Saturday, and they were like, let's do it. All plans are extremely tentative right now, but it looks like people are eager to do shows. I hope it's safe by November, and so the early stages for Summer Soiree 5 are planning. One, in my shows, I like to have continuity, so one band you can probably guess because they're like basically the greatest band ever, and they haven't confirmed yet, but they've expressed interest. The other artist, I should say, is someone I think we've never talked about on the Punk News podcast, maybe once or twice. And it is going to blow people's mind. I'll tell Hallie and Sam after the show. That artist is not confirmed, but I really hope it goes through. It is going to be fantastic. But here's the quagmire. So many quagmires, as a matter of fact. The ideal show is three bands. Always. That is the ideal show, except for when it's not. I love doing four-band shows when the four bands are distinct from each other, but even if they're distinct from each other, they kind of play off each other. I've thrown four band shows where every band is killer, and honestly, the crowd does love it. I mean, the key is you got to keep moving along. You got to have, the first two bands got to have pretty short sets, and even the third band has somewhat of a truncated set. First two bands, 25 minutes, maybe 20, when all four bands are different and fun, if you have four hardcore bands, people are going to be bored, but if you have a new wave band, a punk band, a ska band, and, a legendary band, people love that stuff. I mean, I love it, So, but the problem with the four band show, especially the way we do it in Philadelphia, where we do all ages and non-alcohol venues, is I am constantly fighting the clock. And quite sadly, poor Joe Jack Talcum, who is the man and the greatest and who has played three punk news shows and has been totally cool about it, he always ends up kind of getting the squeeze because he's usually the second band and I can't really cut my headliner. And honestly, Joe Jack Talcum is a trooper, so if he gets squeezed a little bit, then he'll be like, fine. But that's not right. Like, the guy most willing to play ball and the most guy most willing to cooperate shouldn't be the guy that carries the weight for everybody else, Mm-hmm. And so I feel really bad about that, and I really want to do like a headline Joe Jack Talcum. I'm trying to say, Joe, how much time you want? 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half, whatever. You get it, But here's the thing. For Summer Soiree 5, should we do one show, two mega whammers, and one opener, and everybody gets a full set? Should we do two mega whammers, two cool openers with truncated sets, and honestly have to fight the clock the entire time? Should we do a festival or a fest in one venue, like six or seven bands? My hesitation with that is I've been to many single venue festivals, not many, but some. And honestly, everybody hangs around outside except for the last two bands. So for every band until the last two bands, they're playing to like a 10% full place because everyone is outside being cool and smoking cigarettes, Or should we do one show at Creep Records, four bands, four hot, up-and-coming bands, and then one show at Philomoka the next day, two or three big whammers and three bands, or maybe two whammers and one opener? Or is Summer Soiree 5 two shows? Is that too much? Should we just put all our eggs in one basket and do one killer show with either three or four people and let that be that? I'm interested in your feedback. I have not come to any conclusion whatsoever yet.
You have given me way too many options to think about. Way too many. I personally would like because I like to go to bed. Also, in your well-being, so you don't stress. Possibly three people on a headlining show, that would be nice. If you, like, you know, if you get two headliners or something. And it would also be fun if the two headliners, you know, mixed and mingled a little bit. You know, but, you know, that's up to you. I think a festival is a lot. I get really tired from festivals, and I am probably the first person to be sitting around for two bands just to sit because I don't want to stand for 6 hours.
So you think one show, three bands, and that's it?
Yes, I am voting for that. Especially with COVID, I don't know how a festival is going to fare out right now. You know, we're still trying to figure out things. I do have tickets to go see H2O inside, but I don't know if I'm even going to go because, you know, you never know what's going to happen right now.
When's that show, Sam? When's the H2O show?
Oh, geez. I think it's in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's, you know, it was postponed twice. Yeah. This was supposed to be Toby's birthday party last year. And, you know, that didn't happen. you know, I'm sitting on tickets right now in hopes that it's actually going to happen. And, you know, I'm going to figure out if I feel safe because it's all about safety these days. Yeah. So I think, John, I think if you go with three bands, one show, I think if we go back to normal and I can actually go to a show and feel safe at, maybe if you want to try next year or the year after that for, like, you know, some super festival, a punk new super festival, that'd be nice.
First of all, I just want to say, I think it's so dope that you just, like, went for it and are making moves on this, John. I'm, like, so excited about that. And I would say, yeah, like, I think there's going to be a lot of once things open up, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on and just like a lot of competition. So I wouldn't do like a 2-day thing. I'd do like a 1-day thing. I do think because it's like your soiree, I personally think it's fun to have like four bands, maybe just so it doesn't feel, just makes it feel like a little different from a regular show. It is more just like, oh, we're presenting this. This is like an event, oh, like a punk news event. And have people play shorter sets. I don't know how all musicians feel about it. As a musician, I was always happy to play a shorter set because I love those shows when I go to them. I like things to just like move along. I like to keep things moving, partially because of the Sam issue of like not wanting to stand for too long. And like partially just because like I always think like just leave them wanting more. It's better to just keep things moving and have your audience be like super engaged. But I'm like so glad you're planning this already. I think that's such a good move. It was, of course, my advice to you. So I'm guessing what I'm mostly saying is I'm glad that you took my amazing advice.
Well, actually, I was going to wait, but actually, I'm very glad you gave that advice. And here's why, people, is if you're at the level of event throwing that I am, which is, I guess, DIY, but at the upper end of DIY before you start getting involved with corporations and stuff. I reached out to the venue where I was like, yeah, so is this open? They're like, yeah, it's open now, but I'm not going to name names, but there are three or four larger, I guess what we'll call independent booking agencies. They are already planning on blocking stuff up like super quick. So if you, listener, want to do something, you'll probably want to resolve it, reserve it pretty quickly. Because, I mean, I'm not certainly at, like, Live Nation level, so I'm not, like, dealing at that level. But the people just under that level are already making their moves to snatch stuff up. So, just FYI. Like, I wonder if there's going to be a glut for truly DIY stuff in the fall and winter just because the not-quite-DIY guys are putting their foot in the pie. That makes no sense, but you know what I'm saying.
But in the same way that like the venues were like, yeah, let's do this, and the bands were like, yeah, let's do this. I just think, you know, the fans are going to feel the same way. People are going to be so excited to have shit to do again. It's going to be great.
Hopefully, Matthew, any contract that I'm going to put together, I'm going to put in a thing that says the band or the venue or me can, if the state or federal set has mandatory of less than 75% capacity, then any party can cancel their involvement. Because honestly, like, if it's not safe, I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? So I think just if you're planning on booking a show, listener, I think I would have some kind of clause like that in there, you know. So anyways, do you guys want to talk about Miley Cyrus or should we get back to the news?
Miley?
Yeah.
Well, you had just sort of listed it as a topic that you were going to talk about. So I don't know what angle we're talking. I'm always happy to talk about Miley.
All right. Well, let's talk about Miley then, and then we'll get back to the news. So about 6 months ago, or maybe less, time is so weird during COVID, Miley Cyrus announced this album called Plastic Hearts. And the album had an homage to the Plasmatics. The word Plastic Hearts was written in the Plasmatics font. And the album itself had Joan Jett and Billy Idol on it, and also Dua Lipa, the pop international pop sensation. And it was kind of being billed as Miley doing rock, or Miley doing hard rock, or Miley doing 80s. And I've been kind of anti-Miley, not even Miley's fault. It's just like when she was hanging around Wayne Coyne, the Flaming Lips, I went from being pro-Flaming Lips to anti-Flaming Lips. Like, Wayne, you're being too cute. This girl's like 21. You're like literally like 51. You're insinuating that you're up to not kosher stuff. Like, you know, it's like, bro, you know, I mean, you can be a wild rock dude without exploiting children, essentially, you know. so that kind of turned me off both to Miley and to Wayne. And then Miley put out this album, and I'm a huge Billy Idol fan. I'm a huge Joan Jett fan. And I'm like, well, at what point am I punishing Miley for the actions of Wayne, and instead of digging into it earnestly? And do you dislike Miley more than you like Joan and Billy Idol? I'm like, well, no, that's I like Billy more than I dislike Miley. So I said, let's give it a spin and see what happens. So that album is actually really hard to find in physical format. A lot of that stuff is almost digital only, but I found a CD copy at Target, even though I hate Target, although I did get a very cool retro Rolling Stones t-shirt at Target from the Steel Wheels tour.
That's amazing. I got my 2-year-old a Rolling Stones shirt at Target also.
The Rolling Stones have been doing a phenomenal job making retro shirts available at Target. They did a 70s one with the dragon on it. So listen, as much as I dislike Target, they've been doing an excellent job with their retro Rolling Stones wear, as well as their infant Rolling Stones wear.
Wait, hold on. You guys need to do a side-by-side picture of the 2-year-old and John in your retro t-shirt.
I'm so into this.
And, like, you know, hashtag it, like, Target finds or something.
I'm down. Who was that for? Who wore it better? So... I got Miley's album, Plastic Hearts. And also, I was avoiding, like, getting Miley stuff because, like, I know Hallie and I sort of discussed this before, and I don't know if we had exactly common ground, but it's like I was using the band The Regrets as an example. The Regrets are a band with a really good lead singer, but it's music by teenage girls marketed towards teenage girls. And, like, when that band first came out, like, a lot of guys my age were, like, trying to be, like, uber woke or, like, oh, I love The Regrets. They're so good. You know, so I'm like, all right, let me check out this band everybody's talking about. And it's like, you know, I want to ask you out, but I'm too nervous. And I'm like, I'm a grown man. Like, it's weird for me to be listening to this, you know. And I definitely, like, not to get too spin off on too many tangents, but I love the Coat Hangers. One of the things I love about the Coat Hangers is they tell a side of the story that I haven't heard before, you know, and they tell it, you know, sometimes they're in the right, sometimes they're in the wrong. And that's why I absolutely love the Coat Hangers. They make interesting music from a perspective I hadn't really listened to a whole lot before. Whereas by contrast, The Regrets, I'm like, I feel this is kind of a put on, you know, and I feel it's being marketed towards teenage girls. And that's fine. But I feel it's creepy for me to be listening to that music. It just seems unwholesome to me for some reason, you know. And so that's how I felt about Miley Cyrus. But I got Plastic Hearts because she's 28 or 29 now. So, and I mean, I love Stevie Nicks music from when she was like 24, you know. So I'm like, fine, I'll listen to Miley Cyrus and we'll give it a spin. It's not bad. It's actually pretty good. I would say it's an above average pop album. What I will say is that what was it gonna say? It's above average pop album. What the hell was I gonna say? Well, anyways, listen, the Billy Idol.
But while
track,
you think about it, can I? Go ahead. Like, do you feel like do you hear like? Because I haven't listened to it, and I'd really like to. Like, do you feel like a real punk influence, or is it just more like a design choice?
You hit it on the head. That's what I was going to mention. It's like, this is Miley does glam, Miley does punk, Miley does 80s hard rock. No, she doesn't. It is strictly a pop album, which I'm not against. Like Gwen's first solo album, I think, is amazing. You know, as a side note, Cyndi Lauper's first album is amazing if you haven't checked out that album. But like, I don't think there's a single real instrument on it. So it's almost like, well, if we dress as rock, then it's a rock album. But it's not. And I don't care that it's not a rock album. It just people, like, even reviews are like, Miley tackles rock on her new album. No, she doesn't. It's a pop album. I think that underscores the point that people are more susceptible to marketing and PR spin now more than ever. There's not a single rock track on it. It's all dance music, which is fine. But it's not. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I think it depends on what publication you're talking about, right? Do they really cover, like, you know, the stuff that we cover? Probably not. Exactly. Like, you know, I was like, so that might be, you know, the rocky, like, that might be rocky to them, according to whoever was writing the review, right? I was like, it also depends on who's writing it and what they, you know, listen to or, like, think rock is.
But I feel like that's me going to Taco Bell and saying, I love authentic Mexican food, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like going to a Chinese food restaurant and going, I love Chinese food, when Chinese food, American Chinese food, it really isn't Chinese food.
What's the Billy Idol track? Like, what's Billy Idol doing on the track? Like, if he's not, like, rocking out, it's, like, so hard for, I didn't need to listen to this because it's so hard for me to conceive of, like, what this album is.
Yeah, John, really, like, you really just, like, piqued my interest. Like, I really need to, like, tomorrow listen to this just to get context of, like, what you're trying to say. Plus, the other thing is, you, like, did you need to buy the album to listen to it?
Yes, Sam, I did need to buy the album to listen to it because I don't use Spotify. But even so, I would have anyway because I wanted to, if an album has guest spots from Billy Idol and Joan Jett on it, then I want it, you know. I'm not going to buy the $40 vinyl version, but I'll buy the $10 CD version, you know.
Got it.
The Billy Idol track is actually my favorite track, and I don't mean that you say, oh, Billy Idol, so I like both Miley and Billy are really cool on that track. It is exactly a Billy Idol classic era pop track, like Eyes Without a Face, On a Blue Highway. So not the rock side of Billy Idol, but the pop side of Billy Idol. You know?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And not Catch My Fall. Catch My Fall. Yeah, like the pop side. And honestly, it's really good. The Joan Jett track was a real letdown because they do this, like, I don't, maybe the mixers didn't know who Joan Jett was. They essentially mix her voice out of the album. You can barely hear Joan Jett at all. And it's like, why bring Joan Jett on if you're just going to, like delete her from the album? It was a weird choice. I mean, it's Joan Jett. The one thing that annoyed, not the one, well, overall, I say it's an interesting album. It's not the best album, but it's interesting, and I certainly enjoy listening to it. Here's what I thought was kind of weird, though. With every track, or almost every track, I'm thinking, is this earnest? Like, if you listen to Stevie Nicks, when she sings Landslide, you know, at least at the time she wrote that, she meant that song. When she sings Dreams, you know she means that. Or even like Gwen. Like when Gwen is singing We're Cool, she means it. Or I'm trying to think of another good example. Lauryn Hill. You know, Lauryn Hill means what she's singing, you know. When I listen to Miley, she there's this one song. I like this song a lot, but she's like, if you want me to be faithful, it'll never be me. If you want me to be stable, it'll never be me. I'm like, this doesn't sound like when the Coat Hangers write a track, I'm like, oh, that's Stephanie Luke saying that, or that's Crooked Kid Coat Hanger singing that. I'm like, is this Miley Cyrus singing this, or is this what producers think people want to hear. And here's my, and not to draw this conversation up, but here's my other comparison. I'm realizing I'm all over the map here, but I had a lot of thoughts listening to this
you
album.
You are, but I love that you are. I love that we are having a Miley Cyrus coat hangers conversation, because that will never happen again. It's never happened before. I'm into
it. You're very passionate about this, we can tell.
I am, because I have very conflicting emotions on this Miley Cyrus album. There's a band called The Flirts. And the reason I checked out The Flirts is because there's a record store online it's called the Philadelphia Record Exchange, but it's not called that anymore. They sell millions and millions of records a year, and they sell a lot of stuff for a dollar. So if I see something that looks cool for a dollar, I'll just buy it. And I got this band called The Flirts because it looked like it might sound like the Go-Go's, and it kind of does, but it's just like pop music, and songs are like, we're cruising around looking for boys, we're bad girls, and it's kind of stupid lyrics, you know, I'm like, I don't think a woman would write lyrics like this. And so I look at the credits, and the band is actually some dude, he's some producer, and he just brings in women to sing on the tracks. And I'm like, oh, so this is a guy like writing what he thinks women want to sing that other guys like to hear. So it's not like earnest. It's like a put on, and it's like manipulation almost. And that's how I feel listening. I'm listening to this Miley Cyrus album, and I'm like, I feel like this is what someone who is trying to emulate Miley Cyrus would write, except for it is Miley Cyrus. And I looked at the credits, and I looked at the production credits. They're literally, like, some of these songs have 10 writers, and they're all dudes in their 40s and 30s and 50s. Like, every single one. There's no other women writers on it at all, except for Joan Jett, you know? And I'm like, it's cool that women are, like, kind of dominating pop, but how come on the back end it's still all dudes? And I'm not trying to be Mr. You know, like, this is the right thing. I'm just saying it's like it leaves a weird taste, which is why the album kind of was somewhat Uncanny Valley to me, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you did say it's a pop album, and that's usually what happens with pop albums. I was like, most of the songs on a pop album are written by someone else. Possibly a man.
Isn't that weird? Like, isn't that weird that there's not like Linda Perry's a gigantic pop writer, but she's like the only one. Like, and of course, like a lot of pop songs you hear, like they're written by like the same five people. It's crazy how many like pop songs are written by like the same people, you know, from different arts, you know.
Yeah.
And those people must be like insanely rich, you know.
Insanely talented, honestly. Like, can you imagine just being a human pop factory like that? I like love that. I'm like, I do like pop music. I like pop music a lot. I don't like follow it that closely, but like if you put on a pop radio in the car, I'm like there for it, you know. But that just mystifies me, like the whole process of that, like how you can have 10 people writing on a song. Like, I can't even imagine what does that even look like creatively? Like, what are we talking about? Like, did somebody just come up with some little like bleeps and blips that happen like in the chorus? Like, what are, like exactly what kind of writing are we talking about here?
I have some insight on this actually to answer that question, because I've worked on several cases involving issues like this. So it's often one or two or both of these things. First of all, it's someone will just do something very simple, like a beat, like a drum, like boom, chick, boom, chick. But then they'll put a doo-doo-doo-doo, and they'll sell that for 10 grand, 20 grand. Like literally, like even now, that stuff is still worth crazy amounts of money, you know. Yeah. And then someone else will put, you know, like, you know, and sometimes they'll even piece two songs together. So that's how you get three and four and five people on us, and someone else will write the lyrics.
Yeah.
The other thing is a lot of artists and writers have a deal is, if I'm going to be on this track, if I'm going to be on the album, I get credit for this song, that song, and that song, even though I didn't do anything to it, because I have so much songwriting leverage, I want a piece of everything, you see. So a lot of those stuff is, there's a songwriter credit on it, and that guy had nothing to do with that song at all.
Huh.
Crazy. That's such a different world. I mean, that's why we listen to punk, right?
Yeah.
It's because, like, we're not really that. I mean, to sing along to something in the car, I can handle that. But like for the music, like I truly love, like it's just, that doesn't interest me. That whole world, like really, you know.
I'm just saying, it's like, I mean, I feel like that's the next battleground for artist equality. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to be Mr. Max Rock and Roll. I'm really not. But like there's something weird about teenage girls and 20s women. And it's a bunch of dudes telling them what to say, because they don't need it. The coat hangers prove it. You don't need it. You know what I mean? So, yes. So like, I think that's the next battleground. I think they need more. And honestly, I think it'll make music a lot more interesting. I mean, look at Joan Jett. She writes most of her songs. You're co-writing with Kenny Laguna. Joan Jett rocks. You know what I mean? And so, like, it's just weird. And I don't know why that blockade is still there.
And like an artist like Miley Cyrus also, like, she does, I mean, she's huge. She can decide who she works with. So it is sort of like, then you also wonder, like, why aren't women opening more doors for what, like, why not just hire more women to write for you? Because then it probably would come off as a little bit more authentic or from, like, a strong, like, female perspective, you know? And, like, hire women, man.
Well, they have to lift each other up. That's what it is.
Well, there you have it. We just solved some more of the world's problems. And let's solve another of the world's problem. UVTV have released a new track. UVTV is very much a buzz band on the underground world. Their new album is their third album. It's called Always Something. That's out May 28 via Paper Coup Music. And the new track is called Distant Lullaby. I'm going to go grab a glass of water. Hallie Bullitt, tell us if you like this track, Distant Lullaby.
I love UVTV. And I am so lucky because I actually played a show with them. The first time I heard them was at a show that I played with them years ago. And it was like, they're just one of those bands. Like, as soon as they hit the stage, just, you could feel people were like, oh, what is this? Like, what am I hearing? It's so good. They were still based, I think they're in New York City now, but they were from Florida back then. And so this was like a random show in Columbus, Ohio on an Easter Sunday. You can imagine how fun that was. But this band just, like, they just showed up and just, like, crushed it. And, like, honestly, my band Hiccup at the time, they were doing kind of what we were trying to do, but so much better. And, like, I don't get, like, mad or, like, bent out of shape about stuff like that. I was just like, man, this band rules. So I'm so glad they're still making music, and I like this single. Sam, was this band on your radar at all? And what did you think of this song?
I've kind of listened to them every now and then. Like, I keep on forgetting that they're a thing, which it happens quite often these days because every day is the same day, right? but yeah, I did like this track. I don't know if it's going to be enough to, like, make me listen to them more, but we'll see. Maybe I'll put them on a Spotify playlist and see what happens. Uh-huh. But yeah, no, I did. Yes, they're from Queens, and I did like the fact that, you know, they're from the area, because I do feel like there is a lack of bands from this area right now. Mm-hmm. Everything's churning out of Philly. Philly's a hot spot.
That's right.
It's because Philly is just more for everyone. There was just a mass exodus at some point. Everyone was like, New York is too freaking expensive. Get me out of here. And everybody left for Philly.
Pretty much.
And then I feel like the scene was just, like, strong down there, and they were, like, inspiring more musicians, and that scene just, like, came alive. I mean, listen, New York is a lot cheaper now. I wonder if New York will have, like, a real creative resurgence, because it does seem as if, you know, I mean, we'll see what sticks after the pandemic is over, but it does seem that New York has for the first time in a long time become a slightly more affordable city to live in. So that'll be interesting to see what the trickle down sort of effects of that are. John, what was your, how was your water? First
Delicious.
Of all,
drink water, people. Drink water. Stay hydrated.
And what did you think of the UVTV track?
UVTV is real cool. I feel like this is even more popular than they were, or even more Go-Go's ish, and I'm down for it. I think this band's real cool.
Yeah, great band.
Let's talk trash through Peter Hook. Peter Hook is releasing a 20-hour audiobook version of Substance Inside New Order. Substance Inside New Order was a 1,000-page book about the history of New Order as seen from the perspective of Peter Hook. And really, it's only about three things. Well, it's about four things. It's meticulously about how every single New Order track was recorded and why, and that's very cool. It's about how much he hates Barney of New Order. Barney from, like they hate each other. Like, you think, like, Morrissey and Johnny Marr hate each other, or you think that, like Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only hate each other. They've got nothing on those two guys. I mean, wow, you know, those guys hate each other, you know. It's about how many drugs New Order did, which is cool. Although honestly, that gets kind of boring. And it's about like how many groupies Peter Hook had sex with, which is cool for like the first like 17. But after like 17, like groupie like 142. Oh, she was a real good one. You know, it's like, and he's got like this uncanny memory about like every single groupie that he messed around with, which gets old after a while. But that being said, I do think that the Peter Hook Substance Inside New Order book is fantastic, because I love Joy Division. I like New Order. I don't like the second half of New Order, but I love reading the entire book just because Peter Hook is specific, dead on, and he's biased, but he's not too biased, you know. And so I listened to the audio clip, and the audio clip is about one of the most pivots in the book when he gets in a fist. Well, I will say though, in the book, it's almost never his fault when you're like, really, Peter, this one's not your fault, you know, and maybe it's not, you know, but the one of the audio clips was him having a fist fight with some producer, and then him arguing with Barney about it. So anyways, the Inside New Order book is a good book, and I tend to like books better than audio books just because there's more to them. That being said, I'm excited for that. I will check this out, but I still haven't even checked out the Beastie Boys audio book, which I have to hit up, and the Harley audio book either.
It's a lot more likely that I'm going to be able to check this out now that's an audiobook. Like that, I don't have a tremendous amount of time to read now that I don't ride the subway all the time. That was like my reading time. So yeah, like the idea, I was not probably going to make it through a 1,000 page book anytime soon, but
it's a tome.
But this I could do. This is like, if I listen to this all the time when I'm working out, I could like probably get through it in like a few weeks. Get through it in like a month at the most. So I loved that he was doing like accompaniment under, you know, the few like clips that you posted, John, you could hear that he had like added like instrumentation to some of it. And it just made it like, it just, I don't know, it really drew me in. So I'm excited about this. It's also, it's Bernard, right? Bernard? Barney doesn't sound right to me. I think it's Bernard.
It is Bernard Sumner. You're right, but Peter Hook calls him Barney.
Got it.
Peter Hook feels as though Bernard is too full of himself and is too pompous, so Peter constantly trying to chop him down into a bloke. You know what I mean?
Oh wait, so that's not even his. That's not a nickname that he uses. That's just like Peter being condescending.
I think maybe way back in the Joy Division days when they were just a bunch of punkers, he might have been Barney.
But he
became Bernard sometime during New Order. And so Peter Hook just like chops at him, like, you know.
Yeah, I think I sincerely want to listen to this, because just the few clips I heard, I was like, oh, this is so like engaging and listenable. Sam, are you a Joy Division New Order fan?
So I am a New Order fan, but a New Order fan of like their 80s stuff. you know, the weird stuff, I guess. But yeah, no. So when I was like preparing for the podcast, and I was like looking, I went in a spiral looking up all of the stuff about New Order and all of the stuff about Peter Hook and stuff like that. You know, a lot of Wikipedia reading. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, one, I had no idea that this book existed, so thank you, John, for pointing it out. Two, I do love the fact that he's narrating it, I think. That is him, right?
That's him, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I do love when the author narrates their books, because they do put, like, you know, little spins on it that, like, someone that's just reading the book wouldn't. Like, you know, you might hear something different or whatever. The first clip that you posted, the 10 things to do when forming a group, I think, like, I was listening to it, and he got to the point where he's like, I think it was like 7 or something, moved to Manchester. I like died laughing for some strange reason, because I'm like, oh my, I was like, is that like the keystone to being like a great band, moved to England? But okay, that's fine. It's New Order. But yeah, no, I do. So now I do want to listen to this book. I also do not have time for 1,000 pages of things. I did have I did read, well, listen to a lot of audiobooks on the way to work when I'm on the subways and stuff like that. When I do return to the office, I will be picking this up and listening to it for, 20 hours or something.
Well, there you have it. Let's do one last story, then wrap up this episode. The Mimes, a band we've talked about fairly frequently on the Punk News Podcast, have released the digital version of their debut album and a limited release cassette release with that. The Mimes, of course, are John Hoffman, Megan Schroer, and Moira Reaver. Moira Reaver and Megan are in, well, Moira is in direct hit, but mixtapes. But also Moira and Megan, I think, were in Boys. They're also in Ojukubu Station, and they've been longtime collaborators. The new album is called Plastic Pompeii, and the cassette version is sold out, but a vinyl record version will be coming out later on this fall on, Let's Pretend Records. Hallie Bullitt, we discussed this album before it came out, and we discussed a couple of the tracks. Where do you stand on The Mimes?
We both got our cassettes, right? You got the cassette. Indeed. I got the cassette. Our cassettes are so pretty, John. Can we just talk about it for a second?
Yes,
like,
we can.
So the packaging is so good. It's so well executed and so interesting and unique. And it's not even, right? It's not a, I don't know the word for how they packaged it, John. It's not like a regular cassette.
It is not in your standard clamshell. It is in what they call a, I call them VHS puffy packs, but whatever that is.
Yeah. It's awesome. Like, really well thought out and well executed. And it was like one of those releases where, once I got it, I was like, I am so glad I ordered the physical merch of this. There is just nothing that beats like really great art and like physical merch and something you can hold in your hands and is like, yeah, beautiful to look at. And I have to say, I have not had a chance to listen to this whole album yet. But the songs that I have listened to that weren't like the singles that they had already released, I liked so much. In fact, I thought I liked a few of them better than even than the singles. So I'm psyched on this release. What are your guys' thoughts?
I need to listen to this. Just, Moira being in it, that's just enough accolades for me to, like, pick it up. I am looking at the pictures of this puffy pack, and it looks stunning. it is very well thought out. Like, I think I've told everyone how much I feel about good packaging, and this would fall into the category of good packaging. I don't collect cassettes. I don't like cassettes. I'm sorry. So, maybe when the vinyl comes out, I'll check that out. and hopefully the vinyl, when it comes out, if it matches the cassette, that would be awesome.
Well, it seems like they're definitely putting effort into, like, just, like,
packaging.
The packaging. So I think the vinyl is going to be, like, just as good, right? They're going to do something cool with the vinyl, too.
Yeah, like, I would totally love to see this as a clear, like, ultra-clear vinyl with, like, orange specks in it. Just so that, like, it's consistent and stuff like that. But even, like, the album art looks really, really dope. It almost looks like it's a little Joey Ramone, maybe, on the cover. but it's, like, a super cute diorama that I would totally dig. So, yeah, I'll definitely check this out. Maybe next time I'll have something to say about it.
This album is fantastic. I like this album a whole lot. The whole album is kind of, I like the entire album is like psychedelic and weird and kind of dark and scary, which I dug. It reminded me of Neutral Milk Hotel, except for where after about 5-6 Neutral Milk Hotel tracks, I'm like, just stop whining. With this one, I'm like, yes, let's stay in this dark realm and see where it takes us. And I thought this album was so far my surprise hit of the year. I mean, I'm not like a huge mixtapes fan. I think they're cool. But I think this is like the best thing pretty much anybody in this band has done. And I loved how, like, I think this is one of the beneficial outputs of COVID, and that, like, I feel like they didn't overthink it. They just kind of threw some stuff together, and it's one of these albums where it, like, ends up working out into a total masterpiece instead of just, like, a bunch of random collection tracks. Like, I thought this was a fantastic release, and I really dig it a lot. It's kind of dark. It's scary. It's a little sad, and I don't usually like sad albums that much, you know, but I think this album is, like, Pink Floyd, like, but, like, even more bummed out, sort of. So it's rad. Okay, listen, people, listen to The Mimes. That's going to be my pick for 2021. Like, that's a band to watch out for, people, The Mimes. I'm going to talk about somebody real quick, and then we're going to play Soon by him. And then, well, actually, well, let's wrap up this episode, and then we'll play a song we got in that song. I'm going to play a song by the Mighty Upsetter himself, Lee Scratch Perry, who turned 85 last week. And not only did Lee Scratch Perry turn 85 last week, before COVID, he was planning on to go on tour. I saw him about 6 months before that. He's been recording nonstop. Like it was sad when Bunny Wailer died, and it's nice that we all gave him tribute. But it's even more important, I think, to tell Perry that he's special and that we appreciate him while he's alive. And it's important to tell anybody in your life that, not that Lee Perry's in my life, is that I'm a fan. But anybody in your life, tell them, you know, that you care about them and you're glad they're there, and let them know how you feel. And so Perry's still alive. He's still kicking. He still does kung fu kicks on stage and karate chops and all this crazy shit. And he is the man. And I'm so glad that Perry's still doing his thing. Sam and Hallie, do you guys want to hear the time that I went and saw Lee Perry and this dude did acid and swam across the stage? Do you guys want to hear the time that I grabbed Lee Scratch Perry's set list and pissed him off? Do you guys want to hear the time that I saw Lee Scratch Perry but he didn't come out till like 1 a.m.? Or do you guys want to hear the time that I saw Lee Scratch Perry and this girl jumped up on stage and started trying to grind on him in an effort to, I think, make him feel uncomfortable, but it didn't quite work out that way? Which story would you like to hear?
Wait, hold on. You were that guy that stole a set list and pissed him off?
Well, the show was – I thought the show was over. They left the stage, and I grabbed the set list, and I'm like – and then he comes back out and snatches it out of my hands and starts yelling at me in patois.
So you're that guy.
I am. I actually felt really bad about that for a year and a half. I felt really bad about that because I don't want to make Lee Scratch Perry like sad or mad or something. And he was having a bad time at that concert just because the audience was obnoxious. And I've been to many a punk show where after the band leaves the stage, you can grab the set list, you know, like,
yeah.
So I didn't think it was that obscene, you know, but according to Perry, it was, and I will defer to Perry in almost any circumstance. And so I felt like really bad about that for like a year and a half. Like I really did, you know, and then I interviewed him and we smoothed it over.
You should have just sent him an edible arrangement. I'm sorry.
I love that your solution to any to conflicts is edible arrangement, Sam. I hope we have a little tiff so that I can get an edible arrangement.
Yeah,
I'm gonna pick a fight with you.
Hallie starts picking fights with people to get edible arrangements.
Well, come on, who doesn't like chocolate covered fruit?
Who doesn't?
Well, go ahead, Hallie.
Well, I feel like we already heard about one, but I just want to say for the record that I would like to hear about the person swimming across the stage at some point. It doesn't have to be right now.
We'll tell it right now. So this was a crazy – so this was at Moe's Alley in Santa Cruz, which is one of my favorite venues in the world. It's not on the beach, but it feels like it's on the beach, and they do a lot of – reggae shows there with legendary musicians Sly and Robbie, Yellow Man, Michael Rose, the Abyssinians, Culture, like just the Congos, I think, just many amazing Lee Scratch Perry, many amazing reggae shows there. I've seen some of the best shows I've ever seen there. And but the annoying thing is Santa Cruz is a weird city where it's a tourist city, it's a hippiest city. But it's also a city with like a lot of like actual like gangsters, like heroin dealing gangsters, like that's like big there. And there's biker gangs there, so it's like a weird city. So anyways, not to make the argument, have you guys ever seen that like AV Club article? Like I understand the Muppets more than you ever could. Have you guys ever seen that article?
No.
So I'm gonna sound like that, but like I'm a big fan of reggae music, and I feel like a lot of people that go see reggae shows in the United States know about Bob Marley, and they think Bob Marley is the definition of reggae when he's really not. Even though Ask me some other time. The time I had a couple of Jamaican friends in California, and I was like, yeah, you know, Bob Marley gets too much credit. These other guys should get more credit. Wrong thing to say to a Jamaican. But so I was trying to like in punk, we're like, yeah, you know, the Sex Pistols actually sucked. That ethos is not found in reggae anywhere. You know what I mean? Anyways, so the point being is like, if you go see a reggae show, like it'll be like legit reggae artists, but then like some fans will be yelling like Ja Rastafari, Irie the whole time, and it's like you don't even know what that means. Like, and not that I'm some Rasta scholar, because I'm not, but I know a little bit, you know, and like a lot of Jamaicans have a heavy patois, and they'll be talking to the audience, and they'll be saying something like, yeah, man, we had a long bus ride here, but we're glad to be, and then someone will yell out, Ja Rastafari! It's like, he's talking about his bus ride. You know what I mean? Like, so anyways, the whole time, there was no security there. Not that you need a lot of security, but honestly, at any show where you're going to have really drunk people or really high people, you should have at least one security guard or two. There's no security there. And like people are like high on LSD and they are wasted and they're all yelling like Irie, Ja, Rastafari. They're just yelling like the three things that Bob Marley yells out at Live at the Roxy, you know, or Wailers Live. Like the only reggae album they've ever heard is Bob Marley Live, and they think that's all reggae is, you know. So they're yelling out like Ja, like every other thing Perry says, Ja, Rastafari. And Perry has a very very heavy like patois accent. Even Larry McDonald, his drummer, who is also Jamaican, says Scratch talks with an extremely heavy accent, you know. It's because he's from country. And so anyways, so Perry's up there and he's talking and people are like getting on stage, like which like is kind of not cool at a reggae show, but like Perry thinks it's awesome, right? And so like people are like people are dancing and stuff. And like on stage, and like Perry's kind of, he's not as crazy as the X, but he's kind of crazy. So he's like down with it, like he's having fun. Then this one dude that's like super high, like starts like messing with some of the instruments. Like that is not cool, right? But like Perry thinks it's great. Like Perry's like, yeah. And like Perry's got like this weird keyboard thing that makes sound effects. And the dude starts playing it. And like, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's going to get his ass kicked. And Perry's like laughing and smiling. And he thinks it's like the greatest thing ever. This guy is like so high that he starts like rolling around on the stage. And like he was clearly, I don't know if it was LSD or something, but like he was definitely on some kind of hallucinogen. And I've never seen this before in my entire life. Like they're playing like pretty heavy reggae. And this dude is backstroking across the stage, but there's no water. And I have no idea. And like it looks like this guy is swimming on the stage back. I have no idea how this guy's doing it, right? And he's high. Like, he doesn't even know what's going on. And he's, like, swimming between Lee Perry's legs. And Lee Perry's pretty short. And, Perry, like, thought that was, like, funny. And Perry's like, I'm a fish. Perry's, like, kind of crazy, but he's not as crazy as he acts. But, like, if he sees people responding to crazy things, he'll start saying crazier and crazier things. And I don't know if he just enjoys the attention or if he's putting on people and that, like, he's like, these stupid people will accept anything I say. So he's like, I'm a fish. I swim from the sun as a fish. We are all fishes, you know. And, like the dude on the ground is going, like, Ja Rastafari. And he's, like, swimming between Larry's pet legs and stuff. And then he, like, swims back up to, like, a standing upright position. And, like, Perry's talking. And then he kisses Perry on the cheek, right? And in Jamaica, that is not cool. Like that is really not cool. And Perry just goes from being, like, in a great mood to being, like, absolutely furious. And he starts screaming at the guy, Bombo Clop, motherfucker, blah, blah, blah. But his accent is so heavy, the high guy and most of the audience don't even know what the hell he's saying. And they're like, yeah, Ja Rastafari, I'm feeling irate. And he's going, you dirty motherfuckers, you know, this is how you treat me. And then blah, 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 blah. And like the entire audience, like, they think he's saying, like, Ja is great, be one with nature. And he's like, you motherfuckers, I hate you all. And he storms off the stage. And, like, people just, like, standing there, and they have no idea what just happened. And it was the oddest ending to a show I've ever seen, ever.
All because he got a kiss on the cheek. Man, who knew?
Don't listen. Don't kiss Perry on the cheek.
Don't kiss the man on the cheek. You're going to have to send him, like, 7 edible arrangements.
Yeah.
Yes. Up for it.
I know. So, listen. I love The Upsetter. If you ask me, he's the greatest producer of all time. Certainly one of the greatest recording artists of all time. An amazing person. Not always easy to get along with. not always easy to decipher, but a absolute genius. This is a track by Lee Scratch Perry. If you are the beast, the devil, I am a holy rebel of the highest level. This is the Disco Devil, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth.
Send him to us.
said him to be full of the mercy. Dolly and him ride and him go. You're on him to trouble, no one will be here. Said him to Dolly and him pass and him ride. Lord of mercy.
My neck to rotted. This a ride on ya. What $5 to rot on splat on?
Seen I.
Some
hit. Many moods, so many moods. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm a psychiatrist. I am a doctor. I'm a soul reactor. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm a psychiatrist. I am a doctor. I'm a soul reactor. I bless my name in the rain. I bless my name and bless my aim. Brain. I am a psychiatrist in the rain. I'm a psychiatrist, I heal brain. I'm a psychiatrist, I heal good aim. I am a psychiatrist from whence I came. Many moons, many moons, many moons, many moons. Heal your pain, bless your brain, curse your name from whence you came. I'm a psychiatrist.
Yeah.